there is a reason why our practice in terms of forms is doing the most ordinary things, sitting, walking, eating, because our practice is not about doing anything special or extra. That's the hardest thing for some of us to get, is that there's nothing special or extra that's needed for us to be who we are. There are efforts that are different than what we usually do, but they're only different because what we usually do are the results of reactive habits that seem natural, but that are really a product of all sorts of self-centered cause and effect consequences. No, I shouldn't say consequences, all sorts of cause and effect streams. So our practice, if I use such words, as we've been doing today, is very simple. It's sitting down, breathing, being upright, standing up, walking. And yet those seem very unusual to us, which is why I emphasize the importance of the regularity of doing that, because it seems unusual for us to not be adding something extra on to being ourselves. Or it seems unusual for us to us to not give in or live out of the habits that we're so used to, despite the fact that they cause difficulties for us and others. But by doing what's ordinary, we get to see and experience and taste how we are always beyond ideas of ordinary and not ordinary. Or, if I say it another way, our life is joyous not because of what we do, but because of who we are, what our life is. And yet we need to know that for ourselves. So we therefore need to do things like sit, practice, make effort according to circumstances. So I would like to turn the rest of this time into talking and exploring together what we've seen a little bit in these hours of sitting, and what other questions and points would be useful to clarify to enable us to more effectively, and it's very strange to say this more effectively, but to more effectively be who we are, more easily let go of what gets in the way of being who we are. So I'll stop now and see what you might have to say about this.
Well, it has come to me that I'm able to see clearly on some things that come up, and others I hang on to.
Yeah. And that's fine, in the sense that hanging on means it takes us longer to notice that there's something to do, or we don't notice it till long after the events and what we've done and what others have done and the back and forth. Yeah. It's just sometimes those storms and winds are moderately strong, but we can go out with a raincoat and umbrella, and sometimes they're so intense that no matter what you have, you've got to stay inside, and if you go out, you're just going to get whipped around one way or another. And we don't get to choose what storms appear. We don't. We don't get to choose what weather appears, meaning inside or outside our so-called life, inside or outside our so-called body-mind. We don't get to choose. We get to do certain things, and some of the things we do have consequences, but that's only a little piece of it. We don't get to choose all the rest of the forces of the universe that come together as our life. So, but we do get to practice with it, if I use that kind of word, if we're willing to, and we get to practice to the extent and in the way that we can. And it's neither good nor bad if we have a gentle rain, nor if we have a terrific windstorm, hurricane, you know, typhoon, tornado, or whatever. It's neither good nor bad. It doesn't indicate anything. Just like those don't indicate anything. It's not bad, except from our point of view, if a tornado passes through, and it's not good if there's gentle rain, but you know, there's no drought. It neither is nor isn't. It's just like if there's a volcanic eruption, there's a volcanic eruption. It's not bad. If there's an earthquake, there's an earthquake. And if there is none for 500 years, great. And then they just occur. From the point of view of the volcano and the earth, doesn't make a difference. Even though we think it should or shouldn't. And our life is very much that way. See, it's a product of all sorts of forces. And we have a little bit, but our little bit is what determines the extent that we can be joyous, if I use that kind of word, in the midst of the life that we are. And our life is our opportunity to experience that and go beyond the what I said earlier, the greed, anger, and ignorance that results in harm and suffering. Yeah.
So, is that what you're saying when you talk about what's getting in the way of us being who we are?
Yes.
Okay, because at the same time, that's who we are.
That's right. Except we see, in one sense, attachment or delusion or self-centeredness or reactive habits are just forces of cause and effect. They're just a result of all sorts of sociological, biological, natural, etc., etc., forces that come together as our life, as our name of ourselves. Yet, in this moment, because we are human, we don't have to talk about other beings, but because we are human, we have the choice to be caught up in that, or we have the choice, if I use the word, to be open and loving, or if you use in other words, to see what we're doing and to make compassionate less harmful, less stressful, or non-harmful, non-stressful responses. We have it in this moment. You're right. In one sense, as I said, doesn't make a difference, and yet in a sense it does make a difference, because it makes a difference in the nature of our life, how stressful, and it makes a difference in what people do to each other. Look out in the world, you could see it over and over. People keep, you know, from bombing each other and killing each other to all sorts of minor tiffs in the supermarket or at home or on the road or in Washington, D.C., where people can't talk civilly to each other, and all they do is ad nauseam spout talking points and pay no attention to the others. So, and we don't have to go to Washington, we could talk about Springfield or Chicago or any place humans get together. You know, humans do this. Now, of course, animals do it too, but they do it in a different way, and we don't have to deal with animal practice. That's their practice. We have to deal with what we can.
I haven't thought of animal practice.
Well, think about it all the time.
No, I mean in the sense that, you know, animals, there's different in different animals that they get caught up in self-centeredness and do violence to each other more than just in the pursuit of food and you know, whatever else they need. Mm-hmm. And it's a result of cause and effect. We all have different natures, so to speak, and all different nurtures, and the combination of nature and nurture and our own, call it that little sliver of intention, or in Buddhist terms we have a term, bodhicitta, raising the bodhi mind, the desire and willingness to practice. But that's getting into too many fancy things. You could read some of my talks. That's coming up in a talk. I don't know, in a reading. I don't know if it'll be next time or the time after. I've got two working, and I'm not sure which one's going to get done first. What? Yeah. Or elsewhere. But we don't have to go there. Yeah, so to get back to what you asked. Yes? Yes? It is and it isn't. And we know the difference in terms of our stress and suffering. And that's the point. If you want to say what practice is about, it's to enable us to relieve us of stress and suffering, to enable us to live joyously in the midst of the impermanence, the non-self, non-separate universe that we are.
So, in a way, it's changing who we are. I mean,
No. It's not changing who we are. It's enabling. Because I touch the ground like that doesn't change the ground, but yet if I'm present, I feel how I just did that, if my foot touched the ground. I can also do that and pay no attention. We were just walking. Part of walking practice is being present as we step, as we walk, noticing, feeling the wooden floor when we're on the wooden floor, the carpet, the rough jute, or whatever this is. It's being present and experiencing what's going on, which we could miss, and yet it's there.
But isn't there's an objective?
Well, if you want to say, okay, there's an objective to relieve stress and suffering, because stress and suffering are created only by our living out of reactive habits. So in that sense, yes. But stress and suffering are extra. But we think they're natural.
Yeah.
We think the only ways humans can live is with stress and suffering, and worse. That doesn't mean that illness and death and grief aren't natural. Those are natural. Those just come they come with the package of being born, that dying is included. Being born, illness is included. Being born, grieving is included. If we see more clearly this, as I used the expression earlier, unborn, undying, then in the midst of being born, there's no born, no unborn and undying. But that's different. But see, the point is not the theory, but the point is to see it in our own life. And if we can see how it makes a difference in our own life, great. If we don't, fine. But you have to do it to see it. It's like saying, I want to know about what this drink tastes like, but I don't want to taste it. Well, then someone could write you a story about what it tastes like, but it's much easier to taste it and drink it for yourself, and then you can say. And then you don't even have to say, you've tasted it. Then whether if you're skilled at words, you might be able to say it, and if you're not skilled at words, it's not necessary anyway.
But unless I taste it myself, I'll never really know what it is.
Well, you can get little tastes. Yeah, I think most people, no, shouldn't say most people. Many people, and certainly people who sit, get little tastes. And then the little tastes, if I say it in that way, are encouragements to have bigger tastes. But you have to do the work to have the bigger tastes. You have to prepare the drink and drink it. And over, each day you have to drink it.
But someone, I think Vivian's saying, someone describing it to you,
right.
You're never going to...
Well, you'll get a little. Sometimes that's an encouragement and help. You know, people read reviews of restaurants and then decide to go there. People read reviews of movies and then decide to go see them. And people read recipes and then decide to try to cook it. But if you think by reading a recipe your mouth and body is going to be satiated, I don't think so. I don't think your hunger will be satiated by reading a recipe. Your hunger might be
increased, yes.
You might enjoy the recipe. You might enjoy reading the recipe. And if that's all you want, fine, read it. You'll get a different kind of intellectual, conceptual pleasure and appreciation. But if you're going towards to get something to eat, the recipe is only a support. It won't satisfy your mouth, your hunger. So that's just an analogy, but I mean,
mentioning grief and death and loss reminded me of my younger brother who passed away just this past summer unexpectedly. It's kind of hard to look at something like that and see any kind of joy there, any kind of positive side of losing someone like that. But at the same time, you know, there is a joy there in a way that, you know, the grief and the loss that you feel in something like that is in equal measure to the joy that person gave you in their life.
And your connectedness with them now.
Yeah.
And in recognizing, yes, he died. And yes, just as if you look, and I use this example because it's much easier for us to hear it. If you look at a tree, a deciduous tree that loses its leaves in the fall and in the winter is bare, if you think, oh, it's so terrible that the tree is losing its leaves, you know, that's part of the ball game of a tree having leaves and losing leaves. Now, you could say, well, but the tree's still alive. Well, you could look at that way with plants that grow up for a season and then are gone. Yeah. It's this. It, see, unless we see the nature of what being human is, we then, otherwise we see things in just a finite beginning and end. Born and dying. And that's who we think the person is. Instead, we don't see that the person is bigger than that little bag of skin and bones that we tend to identify someone with. That's the point.
But grief, you also said grief was a part of it too. It was just,
of course.
Just a part of it. Suffering is often what grief is.
Yeah, grief and suffering are different, just like pain and suffering are different. Mm-hmm. I mean, pain is what we have. You know, if I sit on my bottom all day, by the end of the day, my bottom hurts. That's just the way it is. And my legs hurt sometimes. And that's just what comes. And, you know, it's just hurt. That's okay. And I can decide I don't want that, or it's dangerous, then I have to do something else.
If I get caught up in how terrible it is that my brother passed away, or it shouldn't have happened, or how could this have happened, and life sucks and all that, then I've missed the joy. Mm-hmm. That is inherent in having a brother and the teaching that he sacrificed his life for to teach me about impermanence.
No, he didn't. Don't get too fancy that he sacrificed his life to teach you about impermanence.
There is that aspect.
No.
It's true. It's real.
Yeah. No. He just lived his life.
I'm not saying he jumped off a cliff to teach me something. That's not what I'm saying.
No. So he lived his life. And it's sad that he died. You're sad, and that's part of the life, is that we are born and we die. And it's sad when we die. And part of being human is our ability to grieve and to have loss and to have gain.
And all that's true. And at the same time, one thing practice gives us is the ability to take advantage of the teachings that come along that we would normally overlook and miss.
Okay.
But I think, having experienced a big loss almost 4 years ago, for me it's a process. I mean, the grief is there, but it's not there in the same way all the time.
Yeah, it changes.
And it changes, and I change because of it.
Yeah. There's a teaching there, there's no doubt about it.
Well, I don't know what the teaching is, except the fact that grief is there and we get to deal with it.
Well, I did notice that, so today, your wife is Danielle. You've done this many times, right? You come to Evanston, you come to
Homewood,
and there's a certain pattern to it, right? I mean, the day runs in a certain way, and today the pattern got changed.
Oh, it was different than what you expected.
Yes. Yes.
It doesn't matter how so. The point was different than what he expected.
Well, typically we do little shorter settings, and there's a little more talking about, well, how was that? But today we did more session-like practice. So, great. Not expecting that. I did not expect it, and I noticed I did. And most of the time, my expectations are kind of revealed after they aren't met. So you thought it was going to be like that. But I did notice that as you're sitting, there is, I tend to think of concentration increasing or something increases while we're sitting, you know. But actually what I noticed today was that kindness increased because you're sitting there and it's not always just a big whoopee cushion, and I can get angry about it. Get angry that I'm tired.
About the way it is.
Yes, angry about my legs hurt, and angry about why am I getting any better at this, and how come da 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 da. But you know, if you just rest in it, then some kindness surfaces. And
I have a succession. I've noticed that.
Yeah. And even in a little brief period like this, it starts coming up. And you're not really doing anything to make it come up.
You're letting go of what gets in the way of it, I think is what you're doing.
And sometimes to me, I was telling Gemio upstairs, it just seems like if I'm not letting go of anything. It just drops. It drops away. And sometimes you're even surprised when it drops away. I'm like, whoa. It just dropped away. I didn't do anything. I just sat here. And in that sense, while I do think our practice is ordinary, there's something about Zazen I find a little different than any other thing we do. Walking, and that we do in our normal life. Walking, eating, going to the bathroom, washing the dishes. Great things to... There's a lot of peace and relief in all of that if you're doing it and not worrying about why Karen isn't doing the dishes. There's a big difference. But Zazen, and I'm not going to talk a lot about it because then we get into all kinds of little arguments, but Zazen does seem a little different to me.
Yes. That's why the Buddha sat.
Yeah.
That's why various ancestors sat.
And I want to ask you with others how important that is.
It'd be hard to imagine doing this all day by myself.
Well, you could,
but I'm not going to, by the way.
I mean, people do that, right? Genuinely walk for months.
Yeah, well, you have to be mature in a certain way to be able to do that.
Yeah, okay.
Well, it's useful. It's useful to have the support of others. It enables us. And more than that, when we sit with others, we're sitting in a way that's different than when we sit by ourselves. Even though when we sit by ourselves, we're sitting with others.
Mm-hmm.
Even though when we sit with others, it's still our sitting by ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I struggle with. You know, and people, we have a sitting in Springfield and somebody doesn't, let's say X person doesn't come, and I hear later on that they had something better to do, which I don't think was that something that much better to do. And I feel this kind of resentment, like this person let me down. I know that's a self-centered attitude to take, and something to practice with, but it still comes up.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the nice thing about sitting, is just allowing yourself to see what comes up and
just being
there with yourself. And it's a lot different than, wow, I don't really think that, you know, having it down, like rejection
or whatever.
What's
wrong with me or all that.
You got it. All that. It's just, it's really okay.
Yeah.
Even when you don't.
And to let it come up and let it go.
Yeah.
How about someone who didn't speak, if you have anything to say? Sue, Claire, anyone?
That's fine.
Okay, good.
What's with the stick?
It's to scratch myself. No, the stick is object of office, let's put it that way, which means that when you have transmission, one of the objects that you get is a stick from your teacher. And then I use it in different ways, and it's just a, call it a object. I didn't want to say symbol of office, because it's not a symbol, it's a thing.
What's it called?
Tool.
Yeah, you could use it as a, you could say talking stick. Actually, there's formal names for this. Mm-hmm. This in Sino-Japanese would even either be called nyoi, N-Y-O-I, or kutz, K-U-T-Z, or there's a number of other names depending upon what you're calling this.
Did Yoko give you this?
This one, no. This one I made myself. I have the ones that Yoko gave me, but this one is from excuse me, from a root from a tree in Northern California that was it came down in a stream in the, after some storms, and I took it and shaped it. So that's what, where this particular one came. I have other ones that came from other places. There's all these different kinds of sticks, and but that's a matter of it's a matter of tradition, and some of them are, I make use of them in different ways. So this could be used for emphasis and talking, etc., etc. And some of them are used for
hitting
yeah. But
poking.
I don't do that.
You poke.
Well, poking isn't hitting. Well, I mean, that's just like that. You don't know what getting hit is. In Chinese and Japanese tradition, they tend to have a lot of sticks. It's not wallop you, but it's just part of their cultural training forms.
But they have a very different kind of stick.
Yeah, well, that's a different stick, but they use this kind of sticks too.
You use that often as an exclamation point, but hanging on.
I use it for different things, but it's this. I don't use it to hit people.
Last year I went to Indiana to a
Shohaku
setting. I forgot what part of Indiana. But anyway, after I got there, I found out it was Korean.
Yes, they use the sticks.
Yes. And I was sitting there, and all of a sudden I heard this whack, whack. And I was so afraid they were going to come and whack me on the back.
Well, see, it is traditional. It is traditional, and I was trained that way, but I don't use it, and I don't know that. So there's some places in America where it's continued to be used, and some places in America where it's not used. We don't use it very much.
Well, I after we had a lunch break, I inquired about it, and I found out that they only do it if you indicate that you...
Right, you have to request it.
So I was able to relax the second hand.
Right. But there are places, both in America and in Korea and Japan and China and Vietnam, where if you went to sit there, they use it whether you ask for it or not. But also in America, I mean, there's places where they use it whether you ask for it or not.
But you expect it. It's going to happen.
I don't know what you expect, but
you're aware of it.
You might not. But it's part of the form. Yeah. Anyway, we don't have to make a big deal about it. We have to realize that the training is a different cultural, in a different cultural milieu and for different kinds of people. Usually it's younger teenagers and young adults who are first starting, and therefore it's used much more.
It's good to hit teenagers.
Yeah, it's almost required.
Okay. Anything else?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd love to just say that I can echo of your comment or others' comments about sitting with others, and it's always very strong, even if it's just one other person.
Mm.
And so,
can you talk louder?
I just said I just can echo what other people said about sitting with others, and so it's always strong. The sittings are always strong, and so anybody is welcome to come here on a Friday night, and or a Sunday evening as well. But Thursday nights we call Elihu,
Genmyo is a spiritual name, and those who are here and want to get to talk to him, but it's a nice sitting.
What time is that Thursday?
We try to get on gong about 6:15, but we're not always successful.
Depends on dinner, you know.
And Sundays
Steve comes north.
Yeah. And Sundays is what time?
5:30, but no sitting tomorrow night.
Anything else? This is your chance.
Well, I would just say that if you like this, then you definitely want to come to the Zen.org. Very Zen.org. Go to the website, sign up.
And party.
You won't regret it.
No, not a minute.
So life isn't suffering then.
That's right. No, what it is that it's inherently unsatisfactory if you look for satisfaction in things and in people and in circumstances and conditions. Suffering. I like the word stress as a better translation of that, or unsatisfactory. In other words, you can't get satisfaction out of things that are constantly changing and things that are inherently not have permanent, fixed, separate self. Because our idea of satisfaction with things is that they're going to stay permanent, or stay the way we want them to be, or change in the way we want them to change, and that they're going to be fixed, separate, somewhat permanent. And that's, you know, conditions are ongoing change. And there's nothing wrong except it's inherently unable to satisfy self-centeredness. From a self-centered point of view, that's not satisfactory. So that's what that dukkha is.
Ellen, besides conditions, is it also to see that our suffering is caused by our judgments?
Yeah, well, in a way, that's sort of
the same one. The same.
That's the looking for satisfactoriness, which is judgments.
So shouldn't, so right
or wrong. Are about conditions. Conditions mean mental and physical, means human and non-human, means, you know, okay, things that are inside and things that are outside.
Okay, I didn't see that.
See, conditions means ongoing change. Mm-hmm. And ongoing change is in all, in both in terms of our practice is body-mind practice. There isn't this two things called body and mind. That's just a mental concept. Okay. There isn't these two things called self and not self. That's more mental constructs. We tend to operate in the world as if those mental constructs are valid. So when I say the word conditions, I mean all of that. It means that our state, various states change, others' so-called various states change, the various states of even this piece of wood keeps changing.
Yeah.
Some of them change so-called fast, some of them change so-called slow, some of them change in the way we want or when we want, some of them change in the way we don't want, when we don't want.
So to see that it's all changing and that our suffering is trying to keep it the same, thinking it should or shouldn't be like this.
Oh, that's right.
Gotcha.
Or thinking it should change or not change the way we want it to.
Yeah. Okay. That's very clear.
And change could even include I have it or I don't have it. In other words, change means, oh, I should have $1,000. Or, no, I should have not lose $1,000. Or I should have $1,000,000. Or he shouldn't have that. Or Bill Gates shouldn't have $1 billion or whatever he has. I have no idea what he has.
I should have better health at this age.
Yeah, that's
she
right.
She doesn't have great health. She drinks like a fish.
That's right. That's right.
Like a fish.
Yeah. Okay.
anybody hasn't paid for today, there's an envelope on the island in the kitchen. So please put a check or cash or whatever you have, and if you haven't already. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sue.
Thank you.